Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So this morning, on this day of Ekadashi, we will be reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 23. Chapter 23 of Canto 3 of Srimad Bhagavatam is titled as Devahuti's Lamentation. And today we'll focus on text number 34. Text number 34 goes as follows.
Yada sasmara rishabham, rishinam daitam patim, tatra chaste sahastribhir, yatraste sa prajapatih, yada sasmara rishabham, rishinam daitam patim, tatra chaste sahastribhir, yatraste sa prajapatih, yada sasmara rishabham, rishinam daitam patim, tatra chaste sahastribhir, yatraste sa prajapatih.
Yada.
When.
Sasmara.
She thought of.
Rishabham.
The foremost.
Rishinam.
Among the rishis.
Daitam.
Dear.
Patim.
Husband.
Tatra.
There.
Cha.
And.
Aste.
She was present.
Saha.
Along with
Stribhi,
the maid servants.
Yatra,
where
Aste
was present.
Saha,
he,
Prajapati,
he,
the Prajapati Kardama.
Translation.
When she thought of her great husband,
the best of the sages, Kardama Muni,
who was very dear to her, she, along with all the maid servants, at once appeared where he was. When she thought of her great husband, the best of the sages, Kardama Muni, who was very dear to her, she, along with all the maid servants, at once appeared where he was. Purport. It appears from this verse that in the beginning, Devahuti thought herself to be dirty and dressed in a very niggardly way. When her husband asked her to enter the lake, she saw the maid servants and they took care of her. Everything was done within the water, and as soon as she thought of her beloved husband Kardama, she was brought before him without delay. These are some of the powers attained by perfect yogis. They can immediately execute anything they desire.
Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakhaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmay Sri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripatam Maham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha कृपा सिंधु व्ययवच पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवतीर्नैष्टिकी। हरे कृष्ण। यदा सस्मार ऋषभं ऋषीनां दयितां पतिं तत्र चास्ते सह स्त्रीभिर् यत्रास्ते स प्रजापतिः। When she thought of her great husband, the best of the sages Kardama Muni, who was very dear to her, she along with all the maid servants at once appeared where he was. So, in the previous chapters we saw that Manu, Swayambhu Manu and Kardama Muni, they are having a conversation. Both of them are highly realized personalities. And when two highly realized personalities discuss something, something great comes out of that. Some great lesson comes out of that. Some great example or exemplary behavior comes out of that discussion. So, as they are conversing, Manu initiates a proposition. He gives a proposal to Kardama Muni to accept his own daughter, Devahuti, for Kardama Muni to accept her as his wife. So that is a proposal. Kardama Muni is a highly realized soul. His only desire in life is to attain the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So why does he even accept the proposal for matrimony? So Srila Prabhupada explains that Kardama Muni was bound by his duty as a Prajapati. As a Prajapati, it is the duty of a Prajapati to beget progeny. So escaping from material duties is not, we are not licensed to do that just because we are devotees. So if there is a material duty, then those material duties have to be fulfilled. So Kardama Muni had that instruction. And again, it was not even in one sense a material duty. It was a spiritual instruction to him to be a Prajapati. So he was bound by that. The other reason that it is given that Devahuti also desired none other than Kardama Muni as her husband. Devahuti wanted always a husband who is spiritually realized. And Devahuti had heard about the spiritual prowess of Kardama Muni, the spiritual maturity of Kardama Muni from Narada Muni. So she accepted. Also, Kardama Muni had never taken a vow of being a Naishtika Brahmachari. A Naishtika Brahmachari is one who does not spill semen throughout his entire life. So, such Brahmacharis are called as Upakurvan, who necessarily need not be a Naishtika Brahmachari. Which means they will practice Naishtika Brahmacharya for the first 25 years of their life. And then, in order to enter the Grihastha Ashram, obviously then they will need to fulfill the duties and responsibilities of Grihastha Ashram. So such people are called as Upakurvans, and Kardama Muni was one. So it doesn't mean that a person who is entering grihastha ashram then frivolously enjoys sex life with one's partner, and as Srila Prabhupada mentions, begets children like dogs and hogs, and then boasts about one's sex life. I was in the tram the other day. I was going to St. Kilda Road to this one of the offices there. I had a meeting, early morning meeting. So I took the 16 tram and I was going on the way. So there was one very elderly personality who entered, an old man who entered, and there were another elderly couple who entered. So they didn't know each other, but the elderly man sat and the couple sat next to them, and then he was looking at them like this. And then I was sitting next, I was thinking, what happened? You know? Then his opening conversation was, that's what he said, three grandchildren I have. How much you have? They don't even know each other. This is the first question. First opening conversation. Because I was just sitting next. You know. And then these people are saying, four. As if it's like auction market. You know. Four. Then these people are talking about, you know, how one daughter is here, one son is there, and the one grandson is studying in somewhere. And that the whole discussion was around that. And then the guy gets off the tram. And they stop before me. That was the only conversation. So, this is a futile, worthless conversation. And I was, you know, just thinking that with the knowledge that Srila Prabhupada has thankfully given us, what is the point in this conversation? Nothing. It is just boasting about sex life. And I think somewhere in Prabhupada Charitra, we read that Prabhupada once went to somebody's house and that person, I think he was a businessman or someone, he brought all his grandchildren and he showed, this is Tunnu, Munnu, Chunnu, Chunnuka, you know, son, you know, somebody, Ina, Mina, Dika, whatever, you know, whoever those children are. You know. So, then he's introducing everyone, and Prabhupada finally said, he's speaking about his sex life, that's all. So, this human life is not, simply grihastha ashram doesn't mean enjoying, you know, sex life and begetting children like cats and dogs. So, Kardama Muni did not want to marry Devahuti for such a frivolous reason. He was a very self-realized personality. His goal was to fulfill his duty as a Prajapati, and also he wanted a wife who would assist him in his spiritual mission, not who would become a hindrance for him. Now, the beauty is Devahuti stood up to this challenge more than, you know, any other personality that we would hear. Now, who was Devahuti at? Devahuti was the daughter of Swayambhu Manu, a great personality, a very advanced devotee. She was from the royal order. Her opulence is explained in all these chapters. Her father had a lot of material opulence, plus he was a very influential personality. She was brought up in a palace which was unimaginably opulent, even before Kardama Muni built that mansion for her. She was already, you know, living in a palace. It was nothing new for her. So highly qualified by her birth and highly qualified by her upbringing. Kardama Muni, on the other hand, though very spiritually realized, was highly materially impoverished. He had nothing. He had no 2 cents in his jholi, if you like. What do you call a jholi in English? Whatever. He had no bank balance. Nothing in his kitty. So, wife is accustomed to living in palace. Husband is accustomed to living under a tree. So, that is a dichotomy of their marriage. So, despite that, Devahuti accepted him as her husband. She did not worry about her. In fact, she not only accepted this just for the sake of pride, but she actually followed that austere life very happily. Not that she was lamenting every other day, where did I marry this person? No, not like that. No lamentation there. So, again, a description of Devahuti is given, where we find that her austerity was such that her hair was in a mess. Ladies are usually very particular about her hair. Not that men are not, but... You know. So, even in the tram, when we go to office, we'll see. Most of the time, you know, the ladies are grooming their hair. And, you know, getting ready for, you know, the job, like that. So her hair was in a mess. She was hardly eating anything. Her clothes were nothing but rags. No jewelry at all. But still, she was not lamenting to her husband, but accepted her husband wholeheartedly and engaged in his service. That was the mission of her life. And in doing so, she made Kardama Muni indebted to her. By the sheer power of love, she made him indebted to her. Srila Prabhupada mentions this in several sections, that the way a woman can, the wife can win the heart of the husband is by the power of love. Not by the power of lamentation, not by the power of control or domination, but a lady can automatically dominate the husband by two things. One is by the power of her cooking and by sweet words. Mataji, am I missing anything? Two things, right? Power of cooking and sweet words. So, this is something which every man can be satisfied with, mostly. Mostly. Most of the problem comes because of, again, not because of prasadam, because usually even in, you know, devotee matajis, they are all very good cooks usually. So nobody is a bad cook. At least I have not come across any one person who doesn't know cooking. But it is usually the second part, you know, especially when the husband comes tired from office and then there is a boom. And then husband is also saying, I have just come from work and you are lamenting. You know, but I have been at home all the day. What do you think? You know, so, and then it just starts. You know. And then the husband will say, why do I feel like coming home? And then she says, why did I marry you in the first place? So all this starts. So whereas sweet words can really change, you know, the whole mood. So, you know, there was one product called as Melody. Not Melody. Some sweet, I forgot. Some, not Melody. Not, was it Melody or some other product? No, not Melody, it was some other thing. Okay, so... you know, the product was advertised itself like that. You know, in Hindi, the wife is the lady is telling the man, "Shadi aur tumse kabhi nahi," she says, which means marrying you never. You know, and then the ad, you know, shows that she is eating that product, and after eating that product, whatever that is, then she says, "Shadi aur tumse kabhi nahi." You know, marriage with you never. You know, she says, which means it's the same message, but communicated in a much, you know, sober manner. You know. So then this guy's reaction is also, you know, sober in that sense. So I saw that ad, you know, very early in my life. So I got some messages. Anyway, it's not spiritual. So a lot of lessons can be drawn from the example that Kardama Muni and Devahuti are setting for us, you know, from in these sections. So here, today we see that Devahuti, yes, now Devahuti is lived in such a, you know, induced poverty situation, if you like. And Srila Prabhupada also glorifies induced poverty. You know, we are studying the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam in our Bhakti Vedanta course with Keshav Prabhu. So in one particular section where Lord Krishna brings down the two Tamala, which are those trees, Arjuna tree and, pardon? Yamala Arjuna trees. So when Lord Krishna brings down these Yamala Arjuna trees, then in that section, the Damodar Lila, Srila Prabhupada gives very powerful purport on induced poverty. How money and position can corrupt the consciousness. More money, very good family, can make us less dependent on the Lord and can bring us subtle arrogance, you know, in us, by which we can then move away our behavior, our actions, our thinking, our whole demeanor. Will never become humble in life because we have got a position, we have got money, we have got the power to dominate, control people. With all these things, they are not conducive for spiritual life. Janma Aishwarya Shruta Sribhir Edhamana Madapuman, which is what also Kunti Maharani tells. Na evar hati abhidhatum vai tvam akinchana gocharam. One cannot become, it's difficult to become akinchana with all these facilities at your disposal. So, Prabhupada talks about induced poverty there. It's better to, you know, even if you have all these opulence, better to live, you know, not to increase the standard of living just because bank balance is going up. By that, then the dependence on Lord will always be there. And to use that extra money in the service of propagating Krishna consciousness. So Devahuti has is living such a life. She is not lamenting, and Kardama Muni also wants, she becomes indebted, wants to fulfill her desire. So Devahuti, so Kardama Muni arranges for a palatial mansion for her. Now why does she arrange? Because Devahuti, the only thing she asks from her husband is a child in return for her services. Not only in return for her services in one way, but it is very natural for a woman to become a mother. That's why we call women as Matajis. The nature of a woman is to become a mother. So it is not a material ask in one sense. So when a woman asks for a child, it's not a material ask. It is the nature of a woman to become a mother. So she is asking this, and how can Kardama Muni deny this? How can he be so stone-hearted to somebody who has dedicated her life to serving him and to enhancing his spiritual life? It is his duty as a husband to give her protection. Now Kardama Muni had laid a guideline with Swayambhu Manu that I will accept your daughter only on one condition, that as soon as she becomes pregnant, then I will leave her and continue my spiritual journey. The reason was that Kardama Muni's goal was anyway attaining the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His duty was to be a Prajapati, which he fulfilled, and then he rightfully wanted to focus only on the Lord. But at the same time, he ensured that he begets within her womb none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kapila Muni. And he knows that she will be well taken care of by such a self-realized son. In fact, we shouldn't even say the Supreme Lord himself is coming in the womb. So he is assured of that. So he has ensured her protection in one way. So he is not escaping from his material responsibilities and just leaving his wife and then saying that, now I am sannyasi. Now you do whatever you want. Take care of yourself. That is not devotional life. Devotional life is balancing material and spiritual responsibility. Not being a fanatic. So in that sense, Kardama Muni has done a very perfect job. Now, obviously, in order to beget a child, then obviously there has to be union. And as I think two classes back, the Prabhuji, I forgot his name, Rasamandal Prabhu, as he was saying. So in order to beget a child, then there has to be an ambience supportive of the mood that is required for coming together. So Kardama Muni, through this mansion, is creating that ambience for Devahuti. But at the end of the day, though the palace is very good, she herself is in a highly bedraggled condition, Devahuti. So therefore, obviously, then she has to dress also properly for the occasion. So therefore, Kardama Muni asks her to go to Bindu Sarovar, and then she goes into the Bindu Sarovar, and then she finds that there are maid servants who have already been arranged by Kardama Muni. Sorry?
They beautify her,
bathe her, which is all these sections. And now after she is already dressed, and again her beauty is restored now. But as soon as her beauty is restored, then the first person she is thinking of is her husband. This is called as chastity. A woman does not think of any other person other than her husband. So being the supremely chaste woman that she is thinking of her husband, and being the ever dutiful husband that he is, immediately Kardama Muni appears in front of her. In one sense, Kardama Muni doesn't have to travel. The ladies ensure that they take her to where Kardama Muni is, to his location. That is why it is said, at once appeared where he was. So now all of them have appeared in front of Kardama Muni. So there are certain key principles. There are two or three key principles that are coming out of this section. So in today's class, we will elaborate on some of these. So one is the mood of Devahuti. Of course, one key principle we already discussed from Kardama Muni's reference point as a responsible husband. Now let us discuss from the wife's side. So the first lesson we learn is that rigid self-denial is not good for or conducive for Krishna consciousness. I repeat, rigid self-denial is not good for Krishna consciousness. The other day one devotee was also asking me about this. Is self-denial good? Is artificially controlling the senses despite the senses wanting something? Is it good? So is it good or bad? in one sense, you know, yes, you are trying something sincerely, but because it is being done artificially, it will not stand the test of time. Self-denial, which does not arise out of arise on the platform of devotional service or love for the Lord, cannot stand the test of time. It will be there for 2-3 days. After that, the very platform will become very irritating for us. Then we start saying, oh, I hate this Krishna consciousness. I cannot drink tea, I cannot drink coffee, I cannot do anything. To hell with it. So this is called as rigid self-denial. Whereas the approach is Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitah Janayati Asu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayad Ahetukam. By the power of devotional service, automatically such detachment and renunciation will manifest. And that such renunciation which comes out of that spiritual realization will stand the test of time very easily. And one is less susceptible to succumb to temptations, material desires. But simply artificially controlling it, one day it's all going to burst out. Without it, you know, being backed by spiritual realizations and spiritual practices. So, here we see that Devahuti's need is for a child. And one may say that why does she need a child? Because she is also a very advanced devotee. But as a mother, she has this desire. She has the body of a woman. We get a material body because of our conditioning. So sometimes our material conditioning is very strong, which is what leads to all our material desires. So Krishna consciousness, however, doesn't mean that we simply overlook our material condition and try to, you know, artificially deny those. So even Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita does not evangelize denial as a means of progressing in bhakti. Whereas the word given is regulation. That is why the word regulation is given. It's not just denial, 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 and then finally getting frustrated and then doing something stupid by which we fall down. So, regulation has to be there. Regulation and moderation. This is the message of the Bhagavad Gita. To gradually come out of our conditioned nature. Regulation and moderation backed up by sincere endeavor in spiritual life. And sincere acceptance of spiritual practices. Sincere struggle to be able to follow the spiritual principles. So, even if you see Kardama Muni on one hand, he is so advanced, even he is asking for a wife. So rigid self-denial is not good for Krishna consciousness. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 20, Verse 8, it starts with Yadrachaya Mat Kathadao. That is a very interesting verse, very apropos to the situation. Udhav Gita section. So I heard one small snippet from Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj. He was elaborating on this. He was saying that if somehow or the other, by good fortune, he was quoting this verse and explaining that if somehow or the other, by good fortune, one develops faith in hearing and chanting my glories, Lord is saying, such a person being neither disgusted nor very much attached to material life. So both are not good. Too much disgust of material life, not good. Too much attachment to material life, not good. So a person who develops faith in hearing and chanting Lord Krishna's glories, such a person being neither disgusted nor very much attached to material life, should achieve perfection through the path of loving devotion to me. So the path of attaining perfection is not rigid self-denial. It is fulfilling the desires by dovetailing those desires in the fire of Krishna consciousness. By that then one can gradually surmount those desires. In fact, that is the whole idea of Varnashrama Dharma. To gradually elevate one from the lower modes of material nature to the point where one can come to the Shuddha Sattva platform. So this is one learning that we see. And we see umpteen examples, you know, even amongst us. For example, Shankarshanda's Adhikari Maharaj, he was also explaining to us what his earlier life was and how he has, you know, dovetailed his entire life in Krishna consciousness. Now we cannot even say dovetailed, it's a very mild term. He has dedicated his life, he's a missionary in Krishna consciousness. So what a change from an initial state to a person who is a spiritual master to the whole world now. So that is the power of Krishna consciousness. So such renunciation which is backed by spiritual practice and spiritual realizations stands the test of time. Otherwise it just collapses like a big tower which is built on a very flimsy foundation. So it is always in devotional life is all about, you know, reinforcing that foundation at all points in time, and then, you know, building the blocks of detachment on top of that foundation. The second aspect, which is probably we'll spend some time on it, is how should a lady go about choosing her husband? So many of the Matajis here have already chosen husbands, including my own wife. So they can't do anything. They have to live with us. But how to choose a husband? Now this may be good for, especially for Matajis who have, who are yet, you know, not entered the Grihastha Ashram, and also for married women who need to then ensure that their daughters are married properly and situated properly. So how to choose a husband? So Devahuti is giving us nice example. I was reading some literature around this, not necessarily bhakti literature, but sometimes, you know, we can learn, you know, like which section of the Srimad Bhagavatam? We can learn from a tree, we can learn from the animals. Uddhava Gita also? I think earlier section also somewhere it was there, no? Everyone is a guru somewhere. Okay, 24 gurus, okay. So like that, you know, sometimes even on the, you know, internet we can get some words of wisdom. So it was a very nice statement. It said, for a lady, if you make a careful and informed choice of the right husband, if you make a careful and informed choice of the right husband the first time, if you make that right choice the first time, you might never need to choose again. Very interesting. It just caught my attention. So get it first time right. So, husband is not something which is, you know, which you go on experimenting in your life. It is not something which you can go to a customer service section saying that I don't like the product, you know, I want to return, I have the invoice. You know, it's not like that. You can do it with, you know, consumer goods. Okay, so, it is not something which we can do trial and error with in our life. So, because getting it wrong is pretty traumatic for a lady, and I'm sure that, you know, everyone will agree with this. It's a pretty traumatic experience getting it wrong repeatedly. That too. So how does one go about this whole process? So the first lesson is we learn is consulting authority in this matter. Now who did Devahuti consult? Narad Muni. She consulted Narad Muni. It was through Narad Muni's lips that she heard of the glories of Kardama Muni. So consulting authorities before entering into matrimony is extremely important. Because the age itself, the age of 23, 24, it's a very tender age. You know? And the senses are also, you know, one is out of the, you know, if you say in Hindi, we say chhatra chaya. One is outside the umbrella of one's parents. And at the same time, sometimes at this age, one also feels lonely. So, when one feels lonely in life, then that is the most vulnerable time for somebody. And at that time, anybody will feel attracted. Sometimes a man will get attracted with any woman. So, completely, you know, one will not see any internals. Just going by the externals, one gets tempted and then plunges into a decision and then finished. Then whole life suffering. Like that. So, at this time, it is important to consult authority. So, Devahuti has done a good job in terms of consulting Narad Muni. Now, so that is number one. Number two is, what will the authority recommend? What will a spiritual authority? Such an authority is who? Authority is someone who is spiritually realized. Now, he need not be always your direct Diksha Guru. Need not be always, because sometimes one may not even have access to Diksha Guru. There may be so many Shiksha Gurus also, all around us, who one can consult. If Diksha Guru is available, yes, definitely, why not? If other Diksha Gurus are in highly spiritual realized, yes, one may consult them. But needless to say, the main criteria for selecting a husband is that a husband, the ideal criteria in one sense, is that the husband must be Tejiyamsam. Tejiyamsam means spiritually realized. Kardama Muni is addressed by Prabhupada also as Teji Yamsam, who is spiritually realized, God realized personalities. Now, yes, this is the criteria, but in practical real life, such personalities are not seen very often. Teji Yamsam husbands are not somebody, you know, available too often, even within ISKCON. So, these are the practical reality. So, even if you go to ISKCONSeek.com marriage board, if you like, then you will not find too many profiles of Kardama Muni over there. You may find, you know, nice devotee chanting 16 rounds, IBM, project manager, you know, you will find all these things. But nowhere, you know, you will find in the CV, good husband, completely free from lust, anger, envy, greed, pride, illusion. Even in ISKCON's marriage board, you will not find this. Who will respect your mother and father, you know, to the lady, gives a lot of assurance. Who will serve your parents, you know, nowhere you will find in the CV. And no husband can also guarantee that. You know. Even in ISKCON, even people who are chanting 64 rounds cannot guarantee, you know, these kind of things in the CV. You know. So, such a Teji Yamsam husband is not very easy to find. And even if some Kardama Muni profile appears, yes, completely free from lust, anger, illusion, pride. So, oh, found my husband now. What does the husband say is that I will be with you only till pregnancy. After that, see you later. I'm going to the Himalayas, you know, to pursue spiritual life, or I'm retiring to, you know, Vrindavan. How many wives will put up their hand? Teji Yamsam husband now. No. You know what? We want to balance. Can we live close to the temple also? And, you know, husband can be in working life, but still, you know, spiritual. So, even the ladies are not Teji Yamsam in one sense. So, neither we will find such a husband, neither we will find such a wife like Devahuti also. Aspirant like Devahuti. Who will readily accept that husband can just leave after pregnancy. We don't find that. So, there are practical realities. So yes, we draw principles from the Srimad Bhagavatam, but we cannot implement it fanatically in our lives. Otherwise, there will be chaos. Now, we have, you know, or someone like Tukaram. Tukaram, you know, his wife was always concerned, you know, about Tukaram's business. Tukaram will take everything and go to the marketplace, and whoever comes, you know, he says, what is the price? Whatever you pay is the price. He did not, he was even one step above Kolavecha Sridhar. Kolavecha Sridhar at least argued with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You know, Mahaprabhu said, you are charging too much for this. You know, but Tukaram never used to tell any price only. So Tukaram was like, you know, take whatever, aapne jo diya hui hai. Whatever you give, that is what it is. And his wife was always lamenting, you know, how will I, you know, run the house? You know, you are doing, you know, that's called Tukaram business. So if a Teji Yamsam husband comes and he is doing Tukaram business, till the, you know, wife is not happy. Sometimes the children also curse. You know, my father didn't even leave one property for me. You know, now I want to practice devotional life, but I have to drive taxi now, you know, to fund my studies, and from there I have to start, you know, my devotional life. Therefore, I can't balance because 16 hours I am driving taxi, you know, day in and day out. So sometimes even the children will curse the father, you know, like that. So therefore, we have to understand that neither, you know, the men are highly realized nor the women are highly realized for, you know, such a, you know, ideal union to happen, and then for a, you know, Kapila Muni to be born, you know, after that. So, but we have practical examples of such people who have shown that something close to this is very much possible, you know. We have examples in our own congregation. If you see in ISKCON itself, we have Gurujan Prabhu and Jagat Tarini Mataji. What a wonderful example. We have Shankar Shandas Adhikari, Vishnu Priya Mataji. Even in other sampradayas, I recently happened to, you know, have a close discussion with Velukudi Krishnan Acharya, who is from the Shi Sampradaya. Again, if you see his charitra, highly educated and then left everything and then, you know, dedicated his life, you know, he and his wife, both are highly educated. They left and then their only mission is to spread Krishna Bhakti all over the world. So we have such examples who have detached themselves completely, still are in grihastha life. In one sense, you can't even say grihastha life. It's almost like vanaprastha life that they are living. But who are still husband and wife very much together, but the whole purpose of their coming together is not for sense gratification, but to set an example for us. How Kardama Muni and Devahuti in one sense are far out for us to relate. But yes, we can relate to these personalities. They have set that ideal standard for us, which we can follow. They have shown us that, look, Maybe Kardama Muni and Devahuti was in some other yuga, it was possible. But in Kali Yuga, we are setting this example for you, all of you to follow. So if there can be one Bhurijan Prabhu and Jagatarani Mataji, if there can be one Shankar Chandas Adhikari and Vishnupriya Mataji, then there can be many. It is just a question of, you know, how much sincerely endeavor and pray to the Lord that give us that kind of a consciousness, so that we may also set an example and be of effective service to Srila Prabhupada's movement, rather than just being superficial preachers and examples, no, in our own life. So the topmost criteria is Tejiyamsam. Now, if that is not available, what is the next best option, which is very practical for all of us, is to look for a devotee husband, a practicing devotee within ISKCON. That is the most practical for all of us. But many times we see that many ladies just plunge into marriage just because he is an ISKCON devotee. Now, just because somebody is an ISKCON practicing devotee, does it give a rubber stamp that marriage will be 100% successful? Statistics show that even within ISKCON, the divorce rates are pretty significant. Husband ISKCON, wife ISKCON, still there is a problem. Of course, the problem is not with ISKCON again. Please understand. The problem is simply with two egos clashing under the banner of ISKCON. That's all. Right? For example, if Yamunalila and I fight in our house, you know, we have a cat and dog fight, you know, it doesn't mean 3x225 Canterbury building itself is, you know, a problem. Or St. Kilda suburb itself is like that. No. It's a problem of two egos clashing within the bricks which are there. The teachings of Srila Prabhupada clearly give us guidelines how we should live our spiritual life. Prabhupada has not left even a single instruction which he has not told about Grihastha life. No? In the Bhagavatam, continuously from 1st canto to 12th canto, it is being hammered. Every time that section comes. There is not one canto where we have not seen the principles of Grihastha life being hammered by Srila Prabhupada. So nobody can blame ISKCON or Srila Prabhupada's books not being adequate, that they don't know how they should deal with the situation in married life. So everything has been given. But because we are all practicing devotees, like Jayapataka Maharaj often says, that we are not Vaishnavas, we are Vaishnav Abhas. We are trying to, you know, become Vaishnava. So we have to understand, Vaishnava is a very high terminology. Sometimes we say, I am a Vaishnava. No, we are a practicing Vaishnava. We are initiated devotees, not certified devotees. Initiated means what? I have received initiation. In office, you know, if you are initiated means what? That means you have just started. Initial probation days, no? It's like that. Even as a Brahmana, we can say, I want a Brahmana husband in ISKCON. Yes, you can say, I want a Brahman initiated husband in ISKCON, who is trying to follow the principles of Brahminical life. Brahmana is a very high, in fact, if one lecture, you know, I was hearing, one of my godbrothers, Gauran Prabhu, he was lecturing. So, people were saying, he said, someone came and told me, Prabhuji, I am a Shudra. And he thought that, he will be commented saying, how humble, you are thinking of yourself as a Shudra. But actually, he was told, oh, you are a Shudra? Very good. That means you must be following the principle of truthfulness throughout your life. Wouldn't you? He said, no. So, you can imagine what's our position. We look down upon Shudra, but Shudra means truthfulness should be there. So even that we cannot follow. The moment, you know, we enter office, we are already started lying, you know, on a Monday morning. You know, our products are the best in the market. You know, our services are the best. I am the best. I sincerely done my job. All bluffs. Right? So, Shudra means the quality of truthfulness. We can't even be truthful. Even in workplace, even if you want, sometimes you can't be truthful. You can't call a spade. You can't. It's not possible. Right? So, therefore, our position is very bad. You know, we are less than Shudras. Like that. So, therefore, just because somebody is, you know, chanting 16 rounds and devotee within ISKCON doesn't guarantee that such a person will be a good husband. Many, in fact, once a very realized devotee told me, just because somebody is a very good devotee doesn't necessarily mean that he is a good husband. And just because somebody is not a very good husband doesn't mean he is not a very good devotee. It doesn't, you know, they may not really, you can't say because he's not taking care doesn't mean that he's not sincere in his Krishna consciousness. Not like that. It just means that we are in a, you know, we do not know how to connect our Krishna consciousness and the ashrama. We are not clear on those fundamentals, if you like. So, a person who is a good devotee and a good husband is one who is able to apply the principles of Krishna consciousness in a given situation. consistently at all points in time. So it requires a very fundamental, robust understanding of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, on one end we can be too fanatic, or on other hand we can be too lax also. You know, for example, someone, husband has started very simple life, then wife comes and says, oh my God, what is this? Can't we even buy one branded jacket from Myers? Okay. You know, Prabhupada says that we have to fulfill all desires. You know, say, okay. Since we are anyway going to Myers, since you have purchased jacket, shoe is not, you know, looking like jacket. Shoe is, you know, that, what is that? Payless shoe source, payless shop. Jacket is, you know, Myers. So shoe and, they have to go together, no? For a full uniform. And now you have bought all that. Now handbag should be also like that. No? Now everything is branded, so lipstick may also be branded then. No? So now it is gone. It is that the cow, Brahmana, that cowpin story, you know. No, everyone knows, no? All he wanted was what? No, someone to take care, because someone was stealing the cowpens and finally ended up in Grihasthashram, you know, like that. And then ended up, you know, with so many servants and working very hard, you know. Kashtan Kaman Arhate with Bhujamye, you know, working like a dog, you know, to support all these things. So therefore, just because somebody, you know, is a devotee doesn't mean one can blindly plunge. However, one should not undermine the importance of looking within ISKCON for a practicing devotee. As much as that is true, this is also real, because maybe a devotee in ISKCON is not perfect, but someone who is sincerely endeavoring to be an ISKCON, you know, a devotee in ISKCON is actually headed towards the path of perfection. So it's only a matter of time, because that before that person surmounts his anartha by the sheer dint of bhakti. So the probability is very high that if we look for a husband within ISKCON, then there is a greater chance that even if some imperfections are there initially, because bhakti has the power for anartha nivritti, therefore that person will see change. Also, Prabhupada has given such a beautiful institution where we have a very strong layer of counseling that happens within ISKCON in various places. The fact that we have a Diksha Guru itself, that principle itself means that we have someone as a counselor who we can always go to. And then what to speak of Diksha Guru? We have so many Siksha Gurus all around us. And then what to speak of that? We have so many wonderful examples of Grihastha. Even in our own congregation, we have seen our own temple president, you know, Achintarupa Mataji and Anirudh Prabhu and Achintarupa Mataji. What a great example of a very stable Grihastha family, which gives confidence. Yes, there is something going on in this institution. You know? In fact, when this discussion came about saying that in ISKCON try to keep the couples together, because you know ISKCON is gone to the Western countries, and in the Western countries, you know, somebody was mentioning, he's not from ISKCON, in the Western countries, you know, because Prabhupada was preaching in the Western countries, the principles of the husband and wife staying together may have been slightly compromised with. So immediately, you know, the example which I gave to that person was our own temple president. I said, no, our own temple president is Australian. Our own first lady is Australian. And they have set an ideal example of how we should, you know, being together in Krishna consciousness forever. Right? So that example just pushed, you know, I didn't have to give any other logic. I didn't have to quote Shastras or even quote from Prabhupada's books. One example is, what does that say? Example is better than precept, no? That is what they say in English. So one example is the live example. We have Bhakta Prabhu and Bhakti Mataji. And if we see the wonderful dealings, how Bhakta Prabhu, you know, deals with Bhakti Mataji with respect, you know, so we see that, and how Bhakti Mataji deals with Bhakta Prabhu, you know, so there is again an example. Again, speaking of Gurujan Prabhu and Jagatarini Mataji, how they deal with each other, how Shankar Shanda Sadhikari and Vishnu Priya Mataji. I was not able to attend many of his sessions, but I never missed one class also. You know, whatever was relayed, I was all ears, you know, thanks to, you know, the audio people, you know, audio team of our temple. So always I heard that whenever there was some questions came, he always used to ask Vishnu Priya Mataji, would you like to answer this? Like that. And when she refused sometimes, then he used to answer. So this is respect to a lady. Not that I am an acharya and my wife is, you know, also an acharya, obviously both of them. But then, no, I am giving class, so why should I, you know, pass on questions to my wife? You know? So you can see that humble mood also of one of respecting, you know, one's wife, and asking her, would you like to answer this question? How nice. It's a nice gesture. It's a good example, practical example for all of us. So,
one should definitely, you know, one has a higher chance, you know, of success looking for a devotee husband. And because Prabhupada has given a nice institutional framework within ISKCON, then the probability that one will get such a husband is definitely goes up if you search. But again, it's not some rubber stamp saying that any devotee who is chanting 16 round will always make a good husband. And that is where consulting authority becomes important, even if you are looking for a husband within ISKCON. Consulting the right authority. That is very important. Now, sometimes within ISKCON, we also see that we are so hung up with consulting Diksha Guru, Siksha Gurus, that we sometimes ignore the simple principle of consulting our parents, which is not correct. Okay. Of course, if the father is like Hiranyakashipu, yes, we should not completely reject, you know, completely reject. But if the parents are from a pious background, if they are, you know, in Hindi we call samskari, but I don't know how, what is the right word in English? Anyone can translate? What is samskari? Samskari family. Anyone? Culture, huh? Yeah. A culture of, a Vedic culture within the family, in one sense. Backed by, you know, scriptures. So many times, you know, you will find, and you can see such things in India very often, because India has a very strong Vedic culture. So even now, when the switch of Vedic culture has been turned off, the fan is still rotating, you know, for some time before it will come to a complete halt in a few years. You know. So thanks to, you know, IT culture and whatever, you know, and broken families. So so that samskar, the culture, is still prevalent, wherein, you know, parents, you know, try to give pious values to their children. Even now it is there in India, despite all the, you know, Western influence that has happened. So it is not wrong to take advice from parents. You know. So we just because we are a devotee doesn't mean, you know, we should not consult our parents. We just completely disregard, you know, parents' advice. Because now we need not necessarily only go by the parents' choice in our marriage. Though even Prabhupada went by that only. You know, in fact, I was hearing one of Prabhupada's conversations. You know, Prabhupada mentioned that my parents saw the alliance. I had not even seen my wife, Prabhupada said. You know. So, my parents chose, you know, at the age of, I think she was 11, right? And Prabhupada was, how, 14 years old? I don't know, something like that. No, 20 something, and she was 11 something. So, there was Vedic culture at that time. Of course, I'm not getting into that topic. Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj has already covered that aspect very nicely for all of us. But the essential principle is that we consult our parents unless they are Hiranyakashipu. Now, even if we don't directly want to go with their choice, we can bring our parents along with our Diksha and Shiksha Gurus into the forum to then for them to together advise. The reason why it is important is because generally a mother knows her daughter better than anyone else, usually. And father knows the son. You know, what are their weaknesses? So, what are their strengths, weaknesses? The deepest desires of the daughter, behavioral patterns, what puts her off? You know? So, generally the mother knows and the father knows for the son. So, those inputs will be very vital in choosing, in matching the right husband for the lady. Otherwise, we may end up with two different temperaments. Nothing may be wrong with the husband and nothing may be wrong with the wife. But it is just like, you know, for example, a beautiful green shirt will not go very well with a beautiful light blue trouser. You know, you can imagine a dark green shirt with a light blue trouser. You know, how will that look? You know, and with beautiful white shoes. You know, you know? We have one Bollywood hero who dances like that. You know? His name is Govinda. You know, look at it, how can he choose such a dress? Atrocious, you know, any color, you know, like that. So, shirt itself is good, trouser itself is very good, together they just don't gel, like that. So, again, marriage not working very well need not mean, you know, husband is a bad person or, a, you know, or wife is bad. It just means 1 plus 1 is not 2. It just means that. In marriage, actually, there has to be synergy. 1 plus 1 has to become 3. Then it is a successful marriage. Both complementing each other's strengths, you know, encouraging each other in Krishna consciousness. So, sometimes parental inputs is, you know, also plays a very vital role here. And sometimes the help of mature devotee friends, not immature devotee friends, mature devotee friends will also help. Because if we have mature devotee friends in our same age group, then we can generally relate to them. Otherwise, there's a generation gap. Oh, they will always look for Kardama Muni for me. Like that. Whereas, your own friend who has married and happily married, she can give some tips and examples. So at that layer also, can support in this decision making. Now, if for various reasons, even within ISKCON, something doesn't click. Just because sometimes everything is good, but horoscope is not matching. So if it doesn't click, then one can even look outside in a bona fide sampradaya. So it is not wrong for a ISKCON devotee to, for example, look for a husband in another bona fide Vaishnava sampradaya. It may be Nimbarka sampradaya, it may be Sri sampradaya, no problem. Again, we should not be very fanatic in this matter. It's very important to have a devotee husband. A husband who knows SAP, Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojana. A person who knows that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the way to attain Him is devotional service. The goal of life is to perfect our devotional service, and the goal of Grihastha Ashram is to come together and support each other together in delivering our own selves from this material world, as well as delivering our dependents from this material world. As long as these principles are clear, it really doesn't matter which sampradaya the husband comes from. A person who is an advanced devotee, even if he comes from another sampradaya, the basic principles of respecting wife, facilitating her in her devotional life, they all stand true. No sampradaya will preach anything different than what Srila, though bona fide Vaishnava sampradaya will preach anything different to what ISKCON will preach. So, if any problems are there, it is usually because of human imperfections that are there. It is never because of the sampradaya or the Vedic teachings. Finally, to end this class, if we are not able to get even that kind of a husband, again, horoscope not matching this, that, then what do we do? Then the last is, marry a good human being. Nothing wrong with that. Again, we sometimes become very fanatical that we sometimes take out the fact that somebody is a good human being. So why not? So if somebody is a good human being, then such a person eventually can be brought into Krishna consciousness very easily. I know of one example from Bombay where the husband and wife together are very accomplished counselors, cultivating one big part of Bombay. So here, the wife was a devotee. She used to attend lectures every day given by a particular spiritual master. So she will come to the temple from far off, attend the lectures, and she kept on attending these lectures. One day her spiritual master asked her, where is your husband? He says that my husband is looking after his mother, which is my mother-in-law. Then the spiritual master instructed this lady that tomorrow onwards I want you to take care of your mother-in-law and not your husband. You will give love and care to your mother-in-law, and I want him to come and sit and hear the lectures here. And then I want him to come home and tell you all the teachings that I have spoken in the class. That is his responsibility then. Okay. So the roles were reversed, and the husband became devotee like this. Because he felt that, yes, oh my God, my wife is not simply, relegating her material responsibilities to me and then running for Mangala Arati and, Bhagavatam. But she is actually doing her duties at home, and then now I have become a devotee. Now that I have become a devotee, how together then we can go for that Mangala Arati and serve Krishna together, at the same time fulfilling our material responsibilities. So this is a good platform for. Now, why did this person accept this? Because he was a good human being. He saw sense. He was not a. He had some samskaras. So even a good human being coming from a reasonably pious family, just because he is a Ganesh Bhakt, doesn't mean, he is worshipping Lord Ganesh, demigod worshipper, fool, I cannot marry him. No, it's a very fanatical approach again. If he is a good human being, that's fine. He will come into Krishna consciousness. Again, I am saying, after exhausting all options, if nothing is there, then there is nothing wrong. Looking at it this way. Some characteristics, and I end with that, is that a good husband, what are the qualities of a good husband? One who pampers his wife, because ladies like little bit of pampering. Again, pampers doesn't mean those Meyer shoes and jacket and purse and wallet and whatever, not that, but not to the point of spoiling,
But who takes care of some material needs of his wife without becoming judgmental on his wife? You know? No. For example, that day, one Mataji came and told me, Prabhuji, I told my husband, you know, let's have a bigger house. He's saying it's all Maya. Are even here Kardama Muni is building a mansion. What is your problem? Are you so self-realized more than Kardama Muni that you look down upon your wife simply because she asks for some more space in the house? No. Now obviously, if she is asking that I want only in Turak, you know, it has to be 3 floors and it has to be, I don't know what tiles are good. You know, India we say Kajaria tiles or something, you know, I want Jaguar taps and all. Then there is a big, it's yeah, you can say that it's extravagance. But just because somebody is asking for a little bit big space, it doesn't mean that that person is, you know, you just judge that person and say, you're in Maya. You know, as if I am very self-realized. You know. Not like that. So, we have to really understand that, okay, if the family needs a little bit more space, no problem. As long as, like we had, you know, Asita Radhya Prabhu here, very good example, Grihastha example. He was staying in Vantirna. He had that, you know, two-storied mansion. But never has he missed Bhakti Vedanta class. No. He will come from office. In office, he was a CFO. He'll still come and attend Bhakti Vedanta. He'll still do his material responsibilities. He'll still go home. He had elaborate deity worship. You know, his spiritual master, Vedavyas Priya Maharaj, whenever he will come, then Vedavyas Priya Maharaj, he had a room for spiritual master in his house. So, here is an example of a grihastha who has stayed away from the temple but never compromised on his material responsibilities. So sometimes, it's, you know, we should not see this, any request for material, any expectation should not be seen or put down fanatically, being very judgmental on the wife. One should encourage one's wife's hobbies and dovetail it in Krishna consciousness. It's a very practical aspect. You know? Again, we have a very good example. We have an example of Chandaneshwar Prabhu and Mataji, you know, Suvarnadhika Mataji. Suvarnadhika Mataji is extremely talented in writing. I have seen some of her articles in dandavats.com. Now, Chandaneshwar Prabhu is very encouraging of his wife's desire, you know, her talent to write, and he's encouraging that. That is how it should be. That is a good husband. Being supportive of wife. One principle which I learned, you know, some few years back is that never, for all husbands this is, never criticize your wife in front of your mothers. It will not lead to a happy marriage. Always, you know, glorify the good qualities of your wife to your mothers, and again for the Matajis, glorify the good qualities of the husband to your mothers. That is how, and then try to solve all problems together, because we have a beautiful network within ISKCON to solve that. So also glorify your mother in front of your wife, and glorify your wife in front of the mother. That is how it will. Because nobody likes to be corrected by showing their weak spots. Everyone likes to be encouraged. Someone asked me, when was the time when you were encouraged to improve yourself? When you were put down or when you were encouraged? Obviously, I said when I was encouraged. Then he said, if what works for you, why do you think that something else will work for others? Right? And then dependability. Husband has to be dependable. For example, husband's duty is to, you know, is to manage the finances of the house. You know, husband cannot say, I will not manage. You know, he has to be dependable. When the wife is leaving her father and mother and taking shelter of a husband, then it is a husband's duty to bring money into the house and you know, support the wife and child financially. That cannot be passed on to the wife, you know, saying that I am a very spiritual person. A good husband is one who makes the wife a better person. The ideal husband is one who can be a counselor to wife, you know, even when sometimes the wife loses, you know, her temper, or, you know, shows something which is not Krishna conscious behavior, then the husband, of course, the husband should have set that example. Okay? So, with the husband setting an example, he can be a good counselor. And actually, ladies are reasonable in that sense. You know? They will accept good counsel when they know that person, that my husband is also living that example, and his intent of correcting me is not to put me down, whereas to make me a better person. A good husband is one who compromises, you know, for his wife. For example, if a husband wants to, you know, study Srimad Bhagavatam, and he has set himself a target that I have to complete, you know, 10th canto, 21st chapter by the end of this month, and if the wife is down with flu, you know, and the husband says, this is a material disease, you know, for me, you know, bhava rog, I'll go and study Srimad Bhagavatam in the bedroom, what kind of, you know, approach is that? That is again fanaticism, right? So sometimes one has to compromise. We have to understand that a husband taking care of wife is devotional service. For heaven's sake, we have to understand this. Faithful and loyal to one's wife. I don't have to belabor that. Prabhupada said that. That's the whole idea of four regulative principles. And communication, constant communication. Communication breakdown is the worst that can happen between husband and wife. Husband and wife also have to communicate. They have to communicate each other's needs also. And sometimes it is good that a wife, if the husband doesn't understand, you know, the implicit needs, it's better to be explicit. Kardama, Devahuti also went explicitly, Kardamuni, I want a baby boy. You know, right? He didn't say, Kardamamuni is, you know, self-realized, he's Trikala Jnani. So he should have understood my need for a baby. She went and asked him, okay, I want a baby. So sometimes the wife can ask the husband, and then obviously the husband also must fulfill the desire where it is reasonable, but the husband also must keep constant, must encourage the wife such that there is a line of communication open with him all the time. So these are various ingredients for a successful marriage, and most of these principles here we can derive out of, you know, the interaction between Kardama Muni and Devahuti. So I'll stop here. Sorry for going a bit overboard. It was a passionate topic. Any questions, comments or corrections? Nothing? He's going to drop Aditya. We have swap duties. Usually I go for dropping Aditya. He has tuitions in Dandana. So it is my duty every week. Because I had a cluster, she is doing that job today. So she's gone there. Oh, no, not like that. Yes, from her point of view, yes, she has cooperated with me. But yes, that is true. I'm not very good at it though. No, I'm trying to get there. I'm not a very good cooperator. I can give big classes, but you know, I have to, you know, hear whatever I spoke and imbibe in my own life also. Okay, no questions. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.